Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Orioles on the Birds. This is Zach Spedden, joined as always by Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens. And we are coming to you here on the last week until the fall without any regular season baseball whatsoever because the Major Leagues and the AAA Norfolk Tides will be starting next week. And as we gear up for the regular season, we think that this is the perfect time to take questions from our listeners. So this week, we're going to do that over two episodes. Part one, which will be this episode, will focus on the Major Leagues. And part two will focus on the minor leagues and give us an opportunity to preview the two seasons, majors and minors, coming up here. And with that, I'm going to dive into one of the bigger topics coming out of spring training, which is the performance of Kyle Stowers, because one of our listeners and loyal patron, Bobby, wants to know what's going to happen with Kyle Stowers. Now, Bobby got this question in before Stowers hit three home runs against the Pirates on Sunday. I don't know if he saw that coming or not, but I'll just go ahead and start this off with Bob. What is going to happen with Kyle Stowers?
First of all, I love the name of our patron there, Bobby. It's a great name. But for Kyle Stowers, I don't think anything has changed other than props to him for going out and performing, putting his power on full display, whether it's for the Orioles as an injury emergency backup in AAA, or if it's, hey, a team comes calling, loving what they're seeing and seeing what it would take to get him. I think it's good for him regardless. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be, I don't think it matters if he batted 1,000 with 20 home runs this spring. Maybe at that point he would probably force his way onto the team. But my point is that you have Couser along with Hayes, Santander, Mullins, McKenna, Kerstad, Mateo, Sam Hilliard, he's gone. But you have a lot of options for the outfield. And Kyle Stowers is probably sixth on the list. So he's like, if they go with five outfielders, he's one injury away from getting a shot. But unless they do something unpredictable, like trade a Ryan O'Hearn or option a Ryan O'Hearn or trade Ramon Urias and don't give the spot to a Kobe Mayo, like something crazy happens, maybe Kyle Stowers makes it. But from now, I'm happy for him that he's performing, but I'm not sure that it changes anything as far as what we are expecting from him to start the year, at least.
I agree. I think he starts the year in AAA. Just, you're not going to run him out there in center field. So you're going to want, Couser is playing his way onto this roster. And I think if he is on the major league roster, he's going to get some regular run. You've got Mountcastle, Santander, and Adley on his days off from catching that are going to be getting DH at-bats, Ryan O'Hearn there as well. So, like, you can't say, like, Stowers can even be, like, the primary DH to get him at-bats. And you don't want a guy like that just kind of sitting away on the bench, I don't think. I think if you got to choose between the two, you want him down in AAA getting regular at-bats to stay ready in case there is an injury or something. It just comes down to, like, there are too many deserving players and not enough spots. And a three-home-run day in spring training is awesome, but it doesn't move the needle, unfortunately. Like, Kyle Stowers is still the same Kyle Stowers we saw a week ago. This roster is still pretty much the same as it was when we were talking a week ago. The guys that should be getting major league at-bats are going to be in Norfolk to start the year. And it, as much as it sucks for those guys in their careers, like, it's really awesome for the Orioles that how many other teams, if they need to dip into AAA depth, can say, oh, we've got Connor Norby, Heston Kerstad, who I think starts the year in AAA as well, Kyle Stowers, Kobe Mayo. Like, that's, that depth can make a huge difference. And it's like, imagine being upset that Kyle Stowers or Kobe Mayo or Heston Kerstad or likely all three doesn't make the major league roster. It's like, what a catastrophe for Orioles fans. How will we survive this trying time? It's an amazing problem to have. And honestly, it's kind of laughable that the kind of conversations we're having about this roster compared to just what 2 years ago. It's awesome.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I still, you know, as great as Stowers' performance was on Sunday and as great as it has been in camp, I think that right now Colton Cowser, I will have the advantage because of the center field defense, because of some of the things that he can do a little bit better than Stowers. We know that Stowers can hit home runs. He's been doing it since his days at Stanford. The Orioles know that, and I think he's showing himself to be a better overall hitter. But I don't think they're bringing him up to occasionally play right field and occasionally DH and sit on the bench the rest of the time. And while I thought they might do that early on with Kerstad because they had given him some opportunities late last year, I think Cowser has an advantage over both of them right now.
Yeah, I mean, especially because I feel like the team must have said to Colton, here's what we want to see from you come spring. Go work on this, and let's see if you've been able to take that learning experience and improve upon it. And he's done everything and more that they could have asked of him coming into spring after an abysmal start to his major league career, which we know that's not exactly indicative of the type of player that he is and will be. And yeah, he's earned a role on the team, whether it's, I'd hate to have him be on the bench, but I feel like even if he's quote unquote not a starting outfielder to begin the year, I'm sure he'll get in 3-4 games a week at least early on in the season and hopefully earn more playing time from there. I think I predicted that he would start off on the bench as a role player, then become a strong side platoon partner for Austin Hayes. And I'm still sticking with that. Cowser's been awesome.
All right, here's an easy one. I feel like we've talked about this every episode for the last 3 weeks, but we've had some more games. We're getting closer. From Dr. 2K. Does Holiday, Jackson Holiday, make the opening day roster? Zach?
Yes. I'll just leave it there. Yes.
Yeah, I think so. It is funny that it's like, it's all anyone's talk about this camp, and rightfully so to an extent, because it's pretty fast rise for a guy just turned 20 years old, first number one pick in the draft. But yeah, I mean, unless Colton Wong is going to beat him out of a starting job at second base, which I don't think so. Yeah, it seems pretty evident that they basically told him it's your job to lose, and he has not lost it. You don't love the strikeout to walk ratio like we talked about last week, but he did walk against Spencer Strider a couple days ago. Also hit a ball hard off Strider in that game. Yeah, so he's done everything as far as not losing the job. And I think, you know, Orioles fans are excited for a reason. He's a super talented young player. I'm excited to see him out there. Yeah, he's going to be there.
Yep, he is on the opening day roster. That's all I got as well.
All right, we'll move on now to another question from Dr. 2K. What is Ramon Arias's trade value around the league? And Ben, in tandem with that, wants to know chances we move on from Ramon Arias before the season starts. Let's go straight back to Nick.
Arias's trade value, I don't think it's very much. Like, I truly think this is another example of, like, player X provides more value to his current organization than another. And what are you going to get out of Ramon Arias at this point? I don't think it's very much. I know he's been better against righties than lefties, so, you know, you got that platoon aspect maybe isn't there for him, but he's a veteran player who plays multiple positions, and he plays positions where you're going to have rookies, likely have rookies or young players going to be at the helm of this year. So, like, I have a hard time believing that this team rolls out a bunch of rookies at the same time. We've said a million times how Westberg had a very even keel debut last year, which was a good thing. He didn't have that Grayson or that Cowser struggle that, you know, he got to be sent back down to AAA, but there is a book on him now, and it is going to be his first full year in the majors. So he's not a proven veteran yet. Cowser's earned a shot. Holiday's earned a shot. Mayo has earned a shot as well, but, you know, Mayo can't play second base, and he's improving in big ways and step by step doing exactly what you want to do. But yeah, I feel like we're going to talk about Kobe Mayo a lot in this episode, but I think it's very easy to see how the organization can put him in AAA. They keep Ramon Arias and some vets on the big league roster. You can stagger the rookies throughout the year. And if it's me, Ramon Arias is gone yesterday for an 18-year-old Dominican Summer League pitcher, or maybe two of them, and Mayo's a starting third baseman. But I think the Orioles have to see enough in Mayo's data and their analysis to really believe that he can be an everyday starting third baseman at the major league level. And until then, I think they're going to roll with Ramon Urias. I think it's fine. And then when Kobe Mayo is fully ready in the organization's eyes and they're ready to move on from him, and at that point you want to trade him for a couple low minor flyers, so be it. But I think that's probably about all you're going to get. What was Ben's question? Their chances we move on from here before the season starts, I think it's very minimal. He's playing very well this spring. Brandon Hyde loves him. I see no reason why you need to move on from him right now. But
yeah, I agree with everything that Nick said. And to tack on to that, I would point out that it would be very unlike Mike Elias to move Ramon Urias right now. And one of the reasons is that I don't think he'd really be dealing from a position of strength, because Urias is coming off a year where he was pretty solid at the plate, but the defense took a step back, and I think a lot of that was because of the injury. He had the knee injury early last year. He had a couple of other injuries along the way, and I feel like that did slow him down at third base a little bit. So let him go back out. Let him look a little bit closer to 2022 Ramon Urias and help you ease these rookies into, you know, everyday roles or semi-everyday roles at the major league level. I'm not in a huge rush to see the Orioles trade Urias, because we saw it last year. If someone is hitting well at AAA and they think they can help the team win now, they'll bring that player up and they'll play him ahead of Ramon Urias. They did that with Jordan Westberg last year. They'll do it again this year. So I would say right now, to kind of answer both questions directly, the first part of that from Dr. 2K, not enough to make the Orioles want to move Urias right now. And then the second part of that, can never say never, but I'd maybe give it a 5 to 10% chance.
I am a little bit higher on the chances that Urias is traded. I would put it like 25, 30% chance, which is not a majority. I don't think it's going to happen, but I could totally see it. I guarantee they're at least looking into what they could get for him. And I would imagine that they could get, like Nick said, maybe a couple flyers in either the, you know, rookie league ball or low A. But I wonder if they could get a guy who's similar in major league service time, but maybe a relief pitcher as opposed to like a utility part-time player on offense like Urias. Maybe a guy who's entering his first year of arbitration that's out of options, a decent reliever. Maybe they could get someone like that. I'd love to see it happen, because I want to get as many of these young players up in the major leagues as quick as possible, especially with that light early schedule that we've talked about. But I do think the most likely scenario is Ramon Urias is on this team to start the season. And it's, look, I like him. He seems like a good dude. He's a solid player, but there's just more exciting guys that obviously we want to see. So No shot against him, but hopefully he is traded.
So we'll go off of that one and go to a question here from Vivek, which is, do we see a minor trade before opening day? And then to add on to that, do we see a waiver claim before opening day? And I'll go back to Bob for this one.
I think there will definitely be a waiver claim. There might even have been a waiver claim since he posted that question. What is Peyton Burdick? When did we do that waiver claim? But yeah, I think especially because I think the last spring training game is Sunday and then there's 3 days off in a row before opening day. I could totally see either a waiver claim or a minor trade like with Danny Coulomb last year. And yeah, I would definitely take over 50% chance that at least one of those two things will happen. I'd say a trade, minor trade that is kind of similar to what they've been doing. Maybe a slightly bigger deal than like these guys where they're just jumping the waiver line, but maybe like a guy that they think they could sneak through. They'll jump the line, trade for him for cash or a minor leaguer and take the chances.
Yeah, we're going to see something. As teams settle their rosters, we know Mike Elias and his staff are really good at scouring the waiver wire and finding somebody. You can always continue to look at this bullpen and try to grab more arms, try to grab more guys that maybe you think you can slip through waivers when you acquire them. picking a specific player is obviously an impossible exercise because it could be one of 100 different players. But I'm sure that will be someone. My first thought was the idea that, yeah, it's probably the trade, like Bob mentioned, but it is that kind of trade that where you're paying, you know, a couple grand to another team to skip the line in the waiver wire. Cause the Orioles are probably in the back of that line, right? Not fully understanding of how that whole process works when it gets reset or whatever, but I imagine the Orioles have to jump some guys, some other teams if they want to grab somebody. So I could see them making that kind of move. Odds are it's probably going to be a reliever, some type of pitcher that they've identified that they like, but.
Yeah, that's what would happen if you see a move at all. And I would definitely not rule out this front office making a waiver claim. And it may be a waiver claim or it could be a very minor cash considerations trade. But regardless, but definitely not rule something out between now and next Thursday.
Right. Here's a fun one. Could this be who you got as the last bullpen arm even? But back to Bobby Jones here with another question. Really just a statement. More so, Vespe versus Aiken. And then I would think, was that Vivek who added versus Crook as well? Throw him in the mix. So Vespe versus Aiken versus Crook. Take that as you will, Zach.
So I think Vespe versus Aiken is a little tough because they're really not going to serve the same role. Vespe is going to be more of a short outing guy that you bring in probably middle innings, whereas I think the Orioles see Aiken more as their balk reliever solution, which is why I think of the two, Aiken is more likely to make the opening day roster because you got to be able to plan for needing that extra arm in the bullpen early in the year that can give you length, because chances are you're going to have some starts mixed in there where the starter does not go very long. So if we're going to look at it on who's more likely to be on the roster short term, I think it's going to be Aiken for that reason. I'm a little bit more of a believer in Vespe stuff when Vespe is at his best, which has been from time to time in the major leagues. Aiken, we know what we have, which is that if he's throwing strikes and inducing a lot of soft fly balls, he's going to be fine. But if he's not, the outing could get a little ugly. So I think that the Orioles will go with Aiken for the innings aspect. And then Crook, I'm kind of intrigued. I don't see him as a guy that the Orioles go to right away. But if nothing else, another bullpen arm down in Norfolk. And if he's able to go back to AAA and get the walk numbers down from where they were last year, he's probably a candidate to come up either as someone who can give you a short outing or who can go a little bit more, give you a little bit more length because he does have starters experience in the minor leagues. So I think Crook within a few months could be an interesting option.
Yeah, for some reason, I don't trust Crook. I can't put my finger on why. No, I actually am really intrigued by him. Seems pretty similar to Vespe as far as, you know, doesn't have that velocity on fastball, but he's got good slider, good breaking stuff. Yeah, I think Aiken has the edge for now, especially Hyatt's comments. Basically, like, it's the best he's ever looked. He loves him. And I think he came out after that and pounded the strike zone and had a great performance as well in a spring training game. So I'm expecting him to start the season in the bullpen, and hopefully he does well. But if he does have an option, which I think we've figured out he does, I could easily see Aiken, Vespe, and Crook all just kind of swapping in and out all year around as arms are needed or performance dictates. So, yeah, I would go Aiken. Then I'd probably put Crook second just because I feel like they saw something in him, and he looked good to me in his spring training outings. And Vespe's look great as well. So it's really all three of these guys look good. So, yeah, I think we'll see them all in the big leagues, but Aiken gets the edge for now. And sorry, I forgot you didn't answer.
Oh, okay. It's Aiken. For me, it's been the same Aiken for the last 2-3 weeks. I think he makes this roster as well. The organization clearly likes him. Like, I know spring stats, you know, matter unless they don't. They got to fit your narrative or whatever. But with Keegan Aiken this spring, like 7 1/3 innings, 1 walk, 1 hit, 10 strikeouts. Like, that's. That's huge. It's been really good to see. You mentioned Hyde's comments the other day that he looks like he's throwing well. I mentioned the numbers before. I think there were some injuries. He had the injuries as well last year. How much did that play a role into it? But even then, you dig a little deeper. Aiken was putting up some pretty good numbers last year as well, trending much better than in years past. You look at his baseball savant page from last year. I know some points he doesn't even qualify for because he only had like 20 something innings. Some of it's not good, not really good at all. But if you go back to 2022, there's a lot of bright red there for Keegan Aiken. Maybe he can get some of that form back. But really, just I guess take the opportunity to just shout out Nick Vespe. I don't really know how much we've talked about Vespe lately. We're trying to focus more on the majors, have a major aspect of this as well, now that more of these younger guys are in the major leagues. But I think all the credit in the world to Nick Vespe. Like, that's not a shot at him at all. This kid was like a starter in Delmarva in 2019 and was good, struck out a lot of guys, wasn't walking that many guys, was performing well. But then, was that 2018? Yeah, 2019, he was a starter in Delmarva. Minor league baseball doesn't happen in 2020. He comes back in 2021. He skips Aberdeen, goes to Bowie. He's lights out in Bowie's bullpen, gets to AAA, kind of struggled a little bit in that first taste. But ever since then, 2022 on, the guy's been lights out in Norfolk and has been reliable as an up-and-down option for the Orioles. I just think he's got one more year that the Orioles can play those games with him, the up-and-down game. I think that's going to be his role this year, and then we'll see. Is he traded at the end of the year because he's going to be out of options, or does he do enough to prove that, hey, this time next year, we're talking about Vespe making the opening day roster because he doesn't have an option? Or is he, start that routine of, he bounces around from team to team, gets a shot, gets DFA'd, gets claimed, goes elsewhere? I don't know. We'll see what happens. But he's the development with Nick Vespe, and he's pushing 30 now. He's, 28, 29 years old? He continues to develop and make changes to his repertoire and make changes to his body physically to try to get better, and it's showing. So I think credit to him is being a really valuable depth option for this bullpen.
Breaking news. Thank you, Robert Hunt. I did not see this. Blake Snell to the Giants for $62 million, two-year deal with an opt-out after this year. Keep sending these awesome pitchers to the NL. I love it. Yankees don't get him. No American League team does. You got to love it. But I'll go on to my next question now, which is from Ben. Have we seen Ryan McKenna's last regular season game with the Orioles, Zach?
No, we haven't. And I'm going to say that because although I don't think that he's going to make the opening day roster, if he makes it through waivers and starts the year back at Norfolk, he will be back in the major league at some point this year because he can play center field and he's the kind of guy that you don't mind sticking on the bench for a couple of weeks because someone else is hurt. I think if you have a long-term injury, McKenna's not your guy. And I don't think that he could go down there and hit 330 and convince them that he's somehow a different player. But I do think that if you have, just kind of the situation you had last year where Cedric Mullins gets hurt for a little bit and you need someone else who can play center field, you'll bring McKenna up because you don't mind sitting McKenna on the bench for the better part of 2 weeks as your emergency center fielder, whereas you're not going to do that with one of your top prospects. So even if McKenna is outrighted off the 40-man roster at the end of spring training, as long as he's in the organization, I think we see him this year.
Yeah, ideally, yes, we've seen his last game. I think I don't need Ryan McKenna and Jorge Mateo on this roster together anymore. I need more offense, but I'm not going to fight the Mateo thing anymore. I'm cool with having Colton Cowser or Kyle Stowers kind of fill in very sparingly, in Kyle Stowers' instance, very, very sparingly, in center field. But I know the Orioles aren't. They're going to want that true center fielder. Hopefully, Mateo, it shows this organization enough, and he is a great enough athlete that he can handle a move out in center field if they need him out there in time. And maybe that allows the Orioles then to say, hey, we can move on from McKenna. We can give that spot to somebody else. I think that would be ideal. I don't know. We know defense, that the team greatly values defense, right? And I was listening to a show, I think it was last week. It was fantasy focused, but they had a former MLB team employee, a guy who's been 10 plus years working with a few different MLB teams, specifically in the player development side of things. And he was really talking about, he repeated multiple times, and just the way he was talking about this, how teams will take less for that bat if the defense is there, and how much, especially the better teams, greatly value the defensive aspect of players. And that's for that reason. I don't know. I could see an avenue where Ryan McKenna does stay on this roster. They're going to want somebody that they view, I think, as a true center fielder on this roster. I'm hoping at this point that they view Mateo can be that backup guy, but we'll see.
I think we have seen the last of Ryan McKenna in Orioles uniform. Other than this rest of the spring training, he's not making this team. I believe he's out of options. So he's going to be DFA'd. Someone will claim him. And maybe that's the trade, the minor trade we're talking about. Maybe they do Ryan McKenna for someone, or he just gets claimed outright. I just, between Couser, Mateo, Hayes, Hudson Haskin in AAA, I know he's hurt right now, but I Billy Cook even, like, I just feel like there's much better options. You don't need we don't need to live with it anymore. So I think we've seen the last of Ryan McKenna. But what we haven't seen the last of is Birdland Sports, and that is our sponsor for today's show. They are a website founded by the guys from over on Section 336. Shout out to that podcast as well. Birdlandsports.com. Get some high quality, really creative designs, as you can see here on the video. Welcome to Burnsland. You got Gunnar Henderson in the Top Gun font. I actually have that shirt. If you go to birdlandsports.com today, you can sign up with your email to get a 20% discount on your first order. And you can see that they're advertising a video game type of shirt that has the dream starting rotation for the Orioles: Burns, Bradish, Rodriguez, Means, Kramer. Hopefully that is our rotation at some point in the season. And it has the quote from Aaron Boone. That could be a bit of a problem. I think Aaron Boone's got bigger fish to fry over in New York right now with their pitching staff. But yeah, birdlandsports.com. Check them out and buy one of their shirts.
And we'll go in now, continuing with our questions from listeners. We'll go back to Dr. 2K, who wants to know, why are relievers so inconsistent from year to year? And he added on to that, should I be worried about any regression from Yennier Cano? And I'll start with Nick on this one.
It's a fun one to think about. So I think the first thing that comes to my mind is that relievers are typically guys that come up as starters, right? They're developed as starters, they're groomed as starters, but they get to AAA or even the big leagues, they can't find success, whether it's the control is still an issue, they can't get through a lineup multiple times, whatever the issue is, there are issues there with their profile, but the stuff is nasty. Like, it's good enough to get big league hitters out, just not through five or six innings. Like DL Hall, a perfect example when he was here in Baltimore of that. He has issues like the walks and the high pitch counts that prevented him from going deep into games, but look at what he did out of the Orioles bullpen. He was very good. You harness that as long as possible, but if these guys are kind of seen as, I don't know, like the best of the rest, if you will, like that magic, I think, is going to run out eventually. The workload is very sporadic as well. So I feel like maybe when things go south, I imagine it's harder to get back on track. And then it's just this snowball effect from there. But we also talk about a lot with prospects. You know, this guy has a great fastball and a big league slider, but the curveball gets rocked. The changeup isn't very good or whatever. Like, I'm thinking of a guy like Carlos Tavera, right off the top of my head. Good fastball, devastating changeup, but a lot of walks, tons of stuff, struggles to put it all together. I've probably said this before, like, just drop your other pitches, go fastball, changeup, reliever. Well, if you're like a one or two trick pony, eventually hitters are going to see those tricks so often that they're going to learn and they're going to adjust. And the tricks aren't going to be as effective anymore. We also say, like, put them in the bullpen and just go max effort for an inning. Well, instead of being more controlled as like a starter and having a good 10-year run, your body gives out after what, 3 or 4 years, because you're going max effort sporadically. You know, it's the closers and relievers who stick around, I think, for a long time and have great careers. A lot of those guys are one or two trick ponies as well, but their stuff is just on a whole nother level. And so good hitters can just never adjust to those guys. And those guys are very rare. So I'm sure there's a very detailed, nuanced answers out there to this, but those are just kind of the first reasons that came to the top of my mind when thinking about this. But with Cano, yeah, I do think there's going to be regression. You can expect some regression. I'm not saying that's going to be, like, he's going to be a bad pitcher, but I mean, like, his expected ERA and stuff were, I think his expected ERA was more than a run higher than his actual ERA. You could say he kind of maybe outperformed a little bit some of his numbers, but I think he learned what it takes to get through a full season now. So I think his body's going to be better prepared. He's going to be more mentally prepared to get through a full season. So he's not probably not going to be as elite as he was last year, but I still think he's going to be a very good reliever here in the AL East.
Yeah, you can even find educated answers to this on our Discord. Please sign up. It's a link is in the description below or on our Twitter page as well. But yeah, I think Nick pretty much nailed it, but also just like Brian Baker probably should have had a worse ERA, but none of his inherited runners ended up scoring. So he can thank his fellow relievers. Sure, smaller sample size. So one bad outing will hurt your line, your ERA, more than as a starter who's going multiple innings. And, you know, sometimes your stuff is working when you only have one or two pitches. Sometimes, some years, even Craig Kimbrell, that one year was terrible, and he's been pretty good ever since and before then. So if you're a good pitcher, like Nick said, I mean, either your stuff is so good that you can just work through it, or you have to make adjustments, and not everybody can do that.
Yeah, I think you're both right for citing some of the factors, whether it's, you know, the wear and tear that having these short sporadic outings takes, or the volatility that's in small sample sizes. The other thing I think that I would add on to that is that relievers can generally get by on one really dominant pitch. And when that pitch starts to slip, their performance is going to slip. And as I was thinking about this question earlier today, Zach Britton came to mind. Zach Britton was phenomenal for a few years. He had a great career, and I don't want to take anything away from that. But when Britton was at his best, he was throwing a 97-mile-an-hour sinker that hitters could only get on top of if they made contact with it at all. And then he had a couple of injuries, and the velocity dropped, and then he was still a good pitcher, but he wasn't a dominant pitcher after that. So you're just susceptible to those sort of things happening, and it can happen to starters too, but starters have a broader repertoire and maybe a little bit more of an ability to work around some deficiencies in their pitches than relievers have. So that's really the only other thing that comes to mind. But otherwise, I think you guys both touched on it with the short sample sizes and the way outings happen for relievers. And then as for Cano, I agree with Nick. I don't think he will be as dominant as he was last year, but he's still going to be a very capable setup man. And I don't think that any regression that happens is really going to be all that noticeable.
Hope so. Of course, for Cano, this bullpen definitely needs him to step up because RIP Felix for this year. But Mark Bradley here on Twitter has a question and says, if any of the Orioles' projected starting pitchers are ineffective or get injured within the first 60 days, appreciate the specific timeline, who should the Orioles bring up from the minor leagues, if anyone, to be a starter, Bob?
I am going to say Justin Armbruster, just to be a little bit different. I think he's been at AAA the longest between him, Povich, and Chase McDermott, who I think are the top three of Norfolk's rotation coming into this year, unless I'm forgetting someone. But I think he's a little bit underrated, and I think McDermott and Povich have higher ceilings, so why not let them get the innings that they need? Don't bring them up unless they're absolutely ready. But if you need someone in a pinch, I feel like Armbruster's pretty much going to be able to go out there and give you 5-6 innings of 4 or 5 ERA ball, depending on the matchups. So, yeah, I'll go with Justin Armbruster and not just an org guy.
Yeah, I agree with Bob. I would take Armbruster over McDermott and Povich at this point. Povich has looked excellent in camp. I think he's looked really good, but I also feel like there's still some things for him to work on at AAA, and this is something we're actually going to talk about in our next episode, so I won't say too much here, but I think he's going to need a little bit of time at AAA. The only other guy that I would throw in there, just because I'm curious to see what happens with him, is Julio Teheran. if Teron does start the year back in Norfolk, then I could see him being that guy that you go to in an emergency over the first 2 months of the season. Maybe because you don't feel like your prospects are ready, or maybe whatever you need to fill at the major league level is a short-term thing. So you don't feel like you have to bring up one of your prospects. You can just bring Teron up for a spot start or a couple of spot starts or a long relief outing out of the bullpen, whatever it is. But if Teron does not make the major league roster but sticks in the organization and goes back to Norfolk to start the season, or goes to Norfolk to start the season, then I would put him at the top of the list.
Yeah, I had Armbruster as well. I think that's kind of the I don't want to say obvious answer, but like Bob said, he's got the most experience, and I think he's closest to being big league ready. I would say as well, you know, I know there's a lot of hype around Albert Suarez. I don't know if he doesn't make the major league roster, if the Orioles are going to be able to get him into AAA, but I'm not entirely educated here on his roster status and everything surrounding that, just because I'm not sold on him at all, to be honest. But I hope I'm wrong, and I hope there is more there. But I could see if the Orioles are able to get Suarez into AAA to start the year, then that might be a guy. If things are going well, he's getting the whiffs, he's getting the strikeouts. I know he had a couple of rough innings there recently, but there's a lot of bad, but there's also a lot of good with what we've been able to see out of Suarez so far. So if you can get him into AAA, maybe that's one of the first guys. If you're not entirely ready to bring Justin Armbruster up and it's early on in the season, like the question said, the first 60 days, then maybe you give one of the veterans there. There's the comment there. Brand, I think he's got the next question here as well, but he says Zimmerman. I could see that as well. I didn't include that just because I love the story. I love the guy. We know what Bruce Zimmerman is, but I mean, now that you think about it, if it's a short-term thing, I could also see Bruce Zimmerman as well, just because he is that veteran. He's been in the system for a very long time. Clearly the organization values him in that role. So yeah, I think that's another good option too. If you know, you don't fully believe that Armbruster is quite ready, if it's going to be like a multiple start type thing. But
this is from Bran as well. Do you think they move on from Hayes at the trade deadline or sooner? And then I think he also commented here, which kind of goes along with it. How long does Hayes survive if he struggles out of the gate and Kowser takes off? Let's go with Zach.
So for the first part of the question, I don't think Hayes is going anywhere between now and the end of the regular season. If the Orioles really felt like they wanted to move on from him, they probably would have done it by now. And I just think that he seems like the kind of guy that you don't want to subtract out of that clubhouse if you are winning. I remember we had this conversation last year leading up to the trade deadline, which is, do you try to move Austin Hayes? And what I said at the time was that I think that would kind of throw things off in the clubhouse. And you have to weigh that in the middle of the pennant chase. And I think the same thing would apply again this year. So Hayes has not been moved yet. That doesn't mean he's not going to be moved ever. But I think he's here for the 2024 season. Now, for the second part of the question, I think the Orioles are going to need to see a little bit before they pull the switch there to decide they're going to go with Kowser over Hayes, because Hayes is coming off a solid year, not a great year, but a solid year. And Kowser still has not had a lot of major league experience. So they're going to give Hayes time to work things out. I think what will be really interesting to see as you get, you know, to the All-Star break and beyond that is, if Kowser is outperforming Hayes, does that prompt a more traditional platoon split between the two? Does that mean that maybe Hayes plays right field on days when Santander is a DH, which is something I've been advocating for a while? I think Hayes would be much better off in right field when the Orioles are home. But you have to put him in left because he's clearly better out there than Anthony Santander is. So I don't see Hayes going anywhere, and I don't think Kowser is going to do anything, barring an injury in the first couple of months, to change the Orioles' minds on that. But as it gets later into the year, if Kowser is outperforming Hayes and Hayes settles back to pre-2023 levels, I could see him seeing less time in the lineup.
Yeah, I don't see Hayes being moved either. Not this year. Maybe next offseason, it's a completely different story. Hopefully, Kowser does take over that role. Hopefully, Kerstad is up as well, taking over some sort of major league role. You've got Enrique Bradfield Jr., who I think is going to be up sooner than probably some people anticipate. You're hoping, you know, will Judd Fabian or Dylan Beavers pop? Like, there are a lot of outfielders coming, and there are a lot of high ceiling outfielders very close. They're like one or two adjustments away, I think, from really threatening to get some major league playing time at the end of this year and early next year. But for this year, you know, I think it's going to be the big three for one more year, at least Santander, Hayes, and Mullins. You know, it's there are better defensive options out there than Hayes, obviously, but this team, again, like the Ramon Arias thing, this team values a lot of those veterans, and Hayes has been around for a long time. He's seen the good and the bad. Him and Santander specifically, I think, are two guys, they've seen this organization at its lowest lows, and now they're seeing this organization win, and they are instrumental parts in that. I'm not the biggest Austin Hayes fan myself, but I see why this organization would want him to stick around. And I think it's Ben as well in the chat who's made this point a couple of times, where it kind of feels like the organization is probably, and probably some other more casual fans even, are much higher on Hayes than probably we are as a group. I probably agree with that statement and that sentiment. We see a lot of the younger prospects and we get excited when we want to see those guys take over the role, but I think Hayes, at least for one more year, still has some sort of role on this team. As long as he stays healthy and as long as he doesn't enter those massive slumps that he's prone to, he can make a difference some nights. So I'm fine with one more year with him.
Yeah, as much as I'd love to see them move on from him and trade him for, you know, as long as you could get decent return, I don't see it happening. Not coming off 101 win season, first playoff appearance, they're not going to mix it up too much. But at the same time, when Austin Hayes is considered the weak point in your like best nine you can put out there, that's pretty darn good. You're talking about a good team right there. He's a good player. He's a valuable player. But again, there's more exciting guys with more upside coming up behind him. Those are the guys we like to see. But as long as they're more willing to put him on the IL, if he gets banged up, I don't have much of an issue. I think that's really what's harmed him, is he just wants to prove that he's not injury prone. All right, you proved it, Austin. Now, if you're banged up, take 10 days off and get better so you can actually perform when you're on the field. As far as how long can he hold off Colton Kowser, I don't think very long. As far as like full-time playing time, I don't think Austin Hayes is a 162-game player. Even if he is fully healthy, he'll play against all the lefties and probably some of the righties as well. But like Zach said, I'd love to see Santander DH move Hayes to right field and Kowser to left field against right-handed pitchers sometimes. And I think as long as you're willing to, you know, cycle guys through, move things around, that's where versatility comes in. Kowser can play all three outfield spots. Hayes can kind of play all three outfield spots. You should be able to get these guys at least 4 or 5 games a week altogether. So I'd like to see Kowser just get more and more playing time as the year goes on. Yeah.
So no on the contract extension that he wants. I feel like that's kind of like me asking my boss for a promotion and they're like, yeah, we'll think about it. But behind when I walk away, they're like, that was cute that he asked. That's never going to happen.
It's like when the old school engineer is asking for a contract extension when there's all these college age kids coming out ready to work for less money. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll go now to this question.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
From Kevin, will an Oriole strike out 175 times this year? I'll start with Nick.
No. I think Zach pulled up the number before we hopped on, and Gunner was the closest last year. There are actually, I have the whole list here, actually. there were only a handful of guys in Major League Baseball who struck out more than 175 times. And if Gunnar was the leading strikeout guy on this roster last year, that included, this is what, 150-something games? 150 games? And that included kind of a brutal stretch there in the beginning of last year. I'm going to say no. I'm going to put a lot of faith in old Ryan Fuller and Matt Bourque-Schulte and say these guys keep the strikeouts a little bit lower this year.
Yeah, no. Optimistic question from Mr. Kevin Brown in our Discord and Patreon. Yeah, Gunnar Henderson struck out 25.7% of the time last year, over 560 at-bats for 159 strikeouts. So he'd have to keep that strikeout rate for like 600-some plate appearances slash at-bats. I think he's going to improve the strikeout rate, and even though I think he'll get more at-bats, and unless Colton Cowser is playing, going to get 600 at-bats, I don't see it happening.
Yeah, it's not happening this year. If Gunnar led the team to 159 last year, is what Bob said, a pretty brutal stretch early on that I don't see him repeating this year. You basically have the same group of position players coming back that you had from last year. No one's going to approach 175. And in fact, I actually just went back and I looked at the last two seasons before 2023, 22 and 21. Either one of you have a guess of what the high strikeout total was between 2021 and 2022? And who had it?
Cedric Mullins with 166.
Wrong player, and the number is lower.
I'm going to say 185. I don't know who off the top of my head. 185.
So between the 21 and 22 seasons, the most strikeouts by a single player was Ryan Mountcastle with 161 in 2021. The following year, Mountcastle led the team in strikeouts again. That number was down to 154.
There we go. Sorry, Kevin.
All right, more fun, maybe hotly debated question here from Tony. Tony asked, bobblehead, floppy hat, or Hawaiian shirt? Bob?
Not really a big fan of memorabilia when it comes to these kind of things. I'm not a floppy hat guy. That I know people love it. It's the bottom of my list. Bobbleheads are cute, but I'd put it second. I go Hawaiian shirt, something I could wear just to be stupid around the house with the kids. I'm not a Hawaiian shirt guy either, but I feel like I could be that cringy dad on purpose with those. So I'll go with that.
I will go the same order because I've been told that I don't look good in floppy hats.
You can't cover up that luscious hair, Zach. Come on.
Yeah, I know on the floppy hat, that's going to end up in the trash if I get that, to be honest. I have an Hawaiian shirt from like 7 or 8 years ago. I don't know how old it is. It's old, but I don't need to. My wife loves when I wear that shirt. Actually, no, I think she tried to throw it away when we moved. I'm only allowed to wear it if I go to Orioles games. And I think it's when I only go to Orioles games without her, I'm allowed to wear that shirt. But the top of my desk behind my computer here, I've got like 30 bobbleheads up here. I would flip the camera around and show you, but I got some political ones too, and I'm just not going to go there right now. But like 90% of these bobbleheads are like Orioles bobbleheads. I really get to go to Orioles games just because of the distance. And honestly, I'm going to plan my trips around like bobblehead games. Got the Eddie Murray last year. That was the one game I went to. I will stand in line for the bobbleheads. A lot of these come from like Frederick Keys games and Bowie Bay Sox games where I stood in line for like 2 hours to get one of them. I'm a bobblehead guy, not going to lie.
Nice. Well, I do get a free Gunnar Henderson bobblehead this year as part of a new Flex Plan member. So maybe that'll change my mind on him, but we'll see. Next question is from The Bird is the Word on our Discord. Great username. Do the Orioles make a splash at the trade deadline this year, Nick?
Yes, I hope so. I think I'd like to see them make a big splash for probably another pitcher, right? I don't know who. We'll see how the season shakes out in a couple of months, who the sellers turn up being and which arms become available. But you can make another big splash, and I don't think this farm system would be hit too much. You're not going to be the top farm system maybe anymore if you make a big splash. maybe not even top five, but you're going to be top 10 still organization in baseball. And you can go out and land another guy with some more control. Who knows? Or you know what? The Orioles surprised me with the Corbin Burnes trade. Maybe it's not even a guy with control. And we truly have seen this organization turn a corner and things are going well. And hopefully Bradish, we see him at some point this year. I still find it very hard to be optimistic about Kyle Bradish. I'm still deathly afraid that we don't see him until late 2025, but I am still holding out a little bit of hope that he comes back, that Means can stay healthy, that this delay was deliberate, and that we see him stay healthy for a full year. Well, once he comes back, at least the majority of the year. Cole Irvin and or Tyler Wells, one of these guys really steps up. Tyler Wells shoved the other day. Would love to see more of that out of him in the rotation this year. We know he's capable of doing it. It'd be a lot of fun to just slam dunk, add another big-time starter at the trade deadline and really take this thing home at the end of the year.
I was going to say no, but then I heard Nick's rationale, and now I'm going to switch my answer to yes. Because even as I sit here and think about with Bradish, I don't think the Orioles are going to feel like, even if they get Bradish back, that they're going to get the Kyle Bradish of last year at least right away. And we saw last year with the Rangers where that depth becomes a necessity down the stretch. So I don't think it's going to be something on par with getting Corbin Burnes. And I feel like that if the Orioles do end up making serious moves to try to get Jesus Luzardo at some point, it will be in the offseason. But I could see them making a move for at least a number two or number three starter at the deadline, and then a better version of Shintaro Fujinami out of the bullpen.
Yeah, I think they'll do something. I think we're kind of at the point now where between the depth of the farm system and the constant contention that we're expecting slash hoping for, I think that we're always going to be a player at the trade deadline for the foreseeable future. And I wouldn't expect any different this year. It might not be a starter, especially if Bradish comes back healthy, everyone's healthy along those lines. It could be an ace reliever or two that they try to go out and get to close out games. But I definitely think they'll be making a move of some sort. Connor Norby will be on Hug Watch around July to August this year.
We'll wrap up this part of the mailbag with a question from Justin, who wants to know, how can you automatically say that Jackson Holliday is automatic when Kobe Mayo has had an objectively better spring? Now, Justin, I have to say, this is deja vu because I think I just had this conversation on Saturday over a very good beer at a very good place in Baltimore that all of us should be going to pretty soon. That's a little tease for something we're going to announce here before too long. But with that, I'm going to turn it over to Bob.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if he's talking to us directly or just like Birdland in general, but I'd say if it was up to us, they'd both be on their slam dunks automatically because they're both killing it. They're both doing a great job. Yeah, Mayo's had a more well-rounded, better spring training, I would say, than Jackson, but they're both holding their own against decent competition in spring training. I think as far as the general vibe, we can say that, yeah, Jackson Holliday is the starting second baseman just based off the Orioles' actions and their comments to the media more than anything. You hear when Mayo's brought up, there's like a thing of, you know, we want to make sure his defense is up to par. Like they're putting a little bit of doubt on the sense that he'll be there. Whereas with Holliday, it seems to be just like, yep, we're going to give him every chance to win the job. And why that is, I don't know. But that's just the way it is right now, it seems like. I don't know. I wish they would both make the team because I think it would, long-term-wise, be great for this year. And you get them more experience early, they're going to be better late. So if it was up to me, they'd both be there, no doubt.
Agreed. I must was. Certain guys too. I'm just, now that this major league roster is good and it's performing, I have found myself even becoming more patient with certain prospects coming up. I don't know. And Mayo is one of them. And part of that is just because this guy's ceiling is astronomical. And like, I think we talked about last week or in our top 50 episode, one of them, but Mayo had a real issue with, you look at the batted ball numbers against, you know, like breaking balls and stuff. They were not very good. He improved on that greatly last year. You got the articles talking about he's improving defensively as well. This guy's making huge strides bit by bit. And he's starting to really put it all together. And it's been amazing to watch. But at the same time, like, Holiday has also been on a different path from the moment he was drafted. Like, he wasn't the consensus 1-1 pick. This organization, I feel like they try to hide it a little bit and be like, oh, we did not expect him to get to this point. I think they did. I'm starting to really believe that they did feel like he was a cut above the Drew Jones and these other guys at 1-1. And he was on this different path from the start. You're talking about a guy who is sound defensively at shortstop already. Maybe he's not majorly ready for shortstop, but if you move him over to second base, he's going to be more than fine. And this spring, he's got a 129 WRC plus and he's hitting 300. He's making the routine plays. He's making a few more difficult plays, at least shout out to, you know, Andy Koska and other beat reporters out there who are highlighting those aspects when we don't get to watch them on TV because we haven't been able to watch much. But he's hitting bombs off Yusei Kikuchi. He's putting up impressive ABs against Spencer Strider. Like, that's huge for this guy. And I think there's an opening there at second base. And with Mayo at third base, there's really not that opening because, like we just talked about with Ramon Arias, I think he's going to be on this roster come opening day. And so you don't want Mayo platooning or playing part-time. Like, you want him in the lineup every single day. So I just think it's very easy for the organization to put him back in AAA and say, continue to refine that defense at third base. Maybe we see him and get some outfield reps. Maybe we see him play more first base. I know he did a lot last year in Bowie and stuff, but refine that defense. And then, you know what? If Ramon Arias isn't providing much value at the major league level and you forced our hand 2 months into the season, then we see Mayo make the leap and he's on the major league roster. But yeah, but we do all want the young guys. There's just not enough at bats. There's not enough playing time for all of these guys.
Yeah, I agree with you both. I think there's just a spot there for Holiday. I think the Orioles have been gearing Holiday up to make the opening day roster, whereas I don't want to say that Mayo has been a surprise because nothing that I've seen in camp has been a surprise, but I think he's now in that position that Jordan Westberg was in a year ago where it's apparent he's going to force the issue pretty quickly, and the Orioles will bring him up before too long, and I am pretty confident this is something we're going to get into in our next episode. I'm pretty confident he is going to graduate this year, and he's going to get a lot of major league time. I just don't think it's going to be right away. We'll see. Maybe they do trade Ramon Arias, and certainly this is not something I would wish, but we do have another week left of spring training, and if there's an injury that pops up that leaves an opening for Kobe Mayo, I think he will and should get it. But for right now, I would expect that he's going to be back in AAA to start the year and probably – one of the first guys that's up that's going to have an extended opportunity to prove himself in the majors.
I mean, I will say, as soon as I started having my doubts about Mayo making the open day roster, he goes 4-for-4 in a game he starts, and then the next day he's starting at first base. Like, it's that made me go, are they just trying to see, like, can they put him on this opening day roster and get him at bats all around, not just at third base, at first base, DH? We know he was working out in the outfield, so never say never. You know, who knows what they could pull out of their hat. Maybe they surprise us, but yeah. Either way, Mayo has done nothing but make his value go even higher. They see what he's doing, whether it's now or later, it's coming.
Well said, and we're going to get into a little bit of this in our next episode, which is going to be a mailbag focused on the minor leagues. We're going to talk about a lot of the top prospects in the system. We'll bounce around the minors a little bit to give you a small taste of what's going to happen in the 2024 season. In the meantime, you can check us out on our many social media channels, including Facebook, Threads, Instagram, X, TikTok, YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube. You can also find us on Substack, OrielsOnTheBirds.substack.com. I will be releasing my second and final projected roster of the spring later this week. You're not going to want to miss that. And be sure to sign up for our Patreon community where you can join for as little as $3 a month, become a paying member, and then at the $5 and $10 levels have access to the exclusive bonus daily coverage we will be providing throughout the break.
You can also catch us on Locked On Orioles.
That's correct. Locked On Orioles. We got an opportunity to go on with our friend Connor Newcomb last week, do our minor league draft. Connor will be on with us next week, and we'll talk about that more in our next episode. But You're going to want to go check that out. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Spedden. You've been listening to Orioles on the Birds, part of the Believe Podcast Network.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.